Q&A Goes episode 453. I'm your host, Mike F, aka Wheels, and with me as always.
102 million, sir.
Wow.
And this is Smokin' Joe Gamer. And that's all I got.
And we're likely without Gaijin this week.
Due to terminal melting.
This will probably be a shorter one this week. Especially if there's going to be a Nintendo Direct next week. Which, is that going to... Will we not be able to talk about that till you come back from Japan?
Yeah, I'm going to be in, like, I will probably be in mid-flight when it airs, if it happens, when people assume it's going to.
Ugh, no.
Can record, like, a mini-sode.
Yeah, we should probably do that.
Yeah.
There's also going to be another thing that I know you guys don't care about.
We're not talking about that, I'm sorry.
Okay.
I mean, there might be interesting things at the State of Play Japan. There's supposed to be a big preview of 7 Revelation at the big State of Play, but, like, honestly, it's not like they need to sell me on that harder.
Yeah.
No.
Stick it in my veins, please.
Okay. I am now reviewing the show notes. Let's take a look. Sure. And I'm also going to open the stream so that I can see Fire Miner questions.
Don't have a Fire Miner sighting yet. It's concerning.
Probably because we started late and he probably thought we weren't doing it. That's okay.
There he is. There he is.
Never mind. Okay.
He's there. Fire Miner.
Morning. Okay, yep. There he is. And oh, Mon Cappy's here too. So.
Yeah. Nice. Huh?
Yeah. So, I got that. Let's check the show notes here. Summer of Falcom. You want to just get that out of the way?
Yeah, there's not a lot to talk about. There's more East 10 Proud Nordics right now. I'm in the last battle of Fire Emblem Engage, prepping for the new Fire Emblem, so once I'm done with that, I will probably be spending some time with Trails for a bit as well.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, East 10 Proud Nordics is very good. I assume, I don't actually know what the difference is from the original release. Doesn't seem that different, but I mean, East 10 in any form is probably very good, so I definitely highly recommend people check that out. But that's about it. That's a quick summer of Falcom.
Okay. And it says here you... What?
Moving into Falcottum.
Yeah.
Says here you want to talk about the Duskbloods network test.
Oh yeah, we have to do that, don't we?
We don't have to, but you're the only one. You played it, and you had some complaints. Yeah,
I have a lot of complaints.
Okay,
and I have like 3 minutes of patience.
Okay, just give me about 3 minutes.
Thank you. I'm putting that on the clock, man.
Okay, I don't like the entire structure of the game. Like, the matches, quote-unquote, throw you in. You pick a character, you go around killing monsters, gaining levels, maybe fighting other players, maybe doing other things, like teaming up to fight co-op bosses. It's kind of clusterfuck.
It sounds like something that would become simpler once you've played more of it.
I mean, I don't even know if it's, like, a... necessarily, like, this is too complicated. It's just... it wasn't fun. Like, there was not a point where I felt like even when I was really grokking the mechanics and, you know, being able to control my character very well.
I'm pausing your timer just long enough to say you're not allowed to use the word grok anymore. It's been officially ruined. No more.
I'm sorry. My bad.
Okay. Time back up.
Even when I was able to fully understand the mechanics, it just never, nothing clicked. It just did not feel particularly interesting. Like, it wasn't fun to do those things in a short period of time, and maybe, I had 1 point less than another person and I got kicked out of the round, like, just, and I have to do this all over again, I don't know if saying something was missing is the right way to describe it, but just something didn't really work about it. And I'd love to see like the full game to get kind of a clear picture of, you know, what exactly the whole thing is going to be like. But yeah, what I played, I was not at all impressed with. Those mechanics were in a single player game, I'd love it, because it was fun to play as this cool vampire-ish character. But as like a multiplayer thing, I didn't get it.
I'll probably pick it up to play with my brother. But then again, I was also the one person on the planet who played Elden Ring and thought, I played this before, I don't need to play this again.
That was kind of my opinion, firing it up on the Switch. I got to like that first boss in the castle where, you know, we probably should be wandering around doing other things before I take on that boss, but whatever. And just was like, I don't think this game is as good as everyone thinks it is.
I can put it to you this way. We've been, Elden Ring is what he's talking about now.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, like we complain. I've complained plenty about it. I'm going to try it again at some point because I'm broken like that. But like I will say, like the paradigm of game of like the FromSoft action RPG dates back to 2009, and that would be roughly like if I could still play action games that played like PS1 games. When Elden Ring, not Elden Ring, when Dark Souls came out. And yeah, that's why I feel like that whole paradigm is long in the tooth and just needs shaking up.
Yeah, my joke was always that it's basically Demon's Souls 7.
Yeah, we're getting there.
And so... my opinion on Elden Ring now is that I love it and it's a masterpiece. It does get frustrating sometimes depending on what character build you're trying to do, and you have a limited number of respecs you can do in a given playthrough because you have to find a specific item and give it to a specific character. And I would say the DLC was absurdly difficult and I have no intention of ever playing that again. But yeah, there's definitely some improvements over other FromSoft games and over Dark Souls. Like, for instance, you get a freaking map now. How cool is that? You know? You get a horse, and
there's... I never longed for a map in those prior games, because they're all, like, they're hub-and-spoke paths, so I was never lost in them.
Mm-hmm.
But what I will say is that, like, I didn't quit Elden Ring because I got frustrated. I wasn't stuck somewhere. I was bored.
Yeah, okay. Well, like, I got into, I played through it three times to get all the achievements on Xbox, so you do have to beat the game at least three times. Not on the same character, though, which is good, because in Dark Souls, it's like, oh, you wanted that platinum trophy. Forget it. It had to be one person.
I made games on platforms with achievements.
Yeah, but anywho, it was on my second and third playthrough that I was like, oh, wait a second, on New Game Plus, New Game Plus Plus, you realize, like, the majority of the bosses are optional, so once you know which ones you have to kill, and once you have, like, upgraded gear, and you have spells, and you're high level, then you can just, you know, destroy the bosses pretty quickly. So that first boss right outside of the castle, you go up to him with a Crimson Rot miracle spell, and you just poison him basically and just watch him die, and it's pretty fun. Rivers of Blood katana is just absurdly broken, and I love it. So
yeah, same as it's been since Dark Souls.
You still can't do co-op without possibly getting invaded. You still have some weird physics glitches because it appears to be the same graphics engine. I think it's still using the Havoc physics. So yeah, but that's my opinion on that. And Dust Bloods at first looked like it was going to be something in the style of Bloodborne, and I don't know that I want anything PvP related, to be honest with you. So
I think in a related vein, I will briefly talk about how I spent some time playing the I spent some time playing the Onimusha Way of the Sword demo.
Okay.
Which has some superficial similarities with Souls games, but is doing something ultimately quite different with how its combat ends up functioning. It harkens back to the Isen system that was kind of half buried in the original three Onimusha games, where attacking directly before an enemy attacked would, like, right, if you attacked right as an enemy attacked, you would get like an instant critical attack. And they've kind of like built the game around like baiting out Isens, either through doing the traditional attack right as an enemy is attacking, or by breaking their guard. But ultimately, because it has no stamina meter, it ends up having a very different cadence of combat than a Souls game. There'll probably be comparisons to Sekiro, which it's probably the closest thing to it, but it's like, it's got its own cadence to how things work. There's a bunch of different, it's similar to Sekiro in that sense. There's a bunch of different ways that you're supposed to, that you can counter attacks based on what they are. So like, you have parries, deflections, reflex dodges, Isens, and I think there's at least one other thing. And so you kind of, but it's in that sense, it's a much less punishing game than something like Sekiro was, where like, if you get the wrong kind of defense, usually you'll just get a much less effective defense, where like you take some stamina damage as opposed to you get your ass beat. But yeah, it looks really good. I'm frankly terrified of Capcom's technical prowess in terms of how well they got it running on Switch 2, as that was what I was playing the demo on. They give you the option for a 30 FPS cap. It will, if you put that on Switch 2, it will never deviate from that. I never saw it drop a frame. Or you can uncap it, where it will run around 50 frames a second, dipping into the 40s. Probably fine if you're playing on handheld, but probably unsightly if you're playing on a TV. Just a very technically impressive, gorgeous looking play. The demo plays really well. Apparently it doesn't get into the core structure of the final game, which has like a central hub of Kyoto and like side quests and all that, so I'll be very interested to see where that goes. But the core combat that the demo does show off is very, very no matter how many like mook enemies I was killing, I never got bored of it, because like it's just fun to do. I saw a review, a very critical review, but a well-reasoned one that was on Kotaku. They didn't gel with it because they found a lot of the extra, like, Kyoto content, they weren't that interested in that. but like, you know, I thought it was a well-reasoned review. It's worth looking into. Like I suspect I will end up liking it more just by dint of like I have followed that writer and know where their tastes lie, so I suspect I will end up liking it more, but it's very well reasoned. But what I was going to say was that they likened the setup essentially to the way that combat ends up playing out as being sort of like Punch-Out, in the sense that like there's like rhythmic timing and like a sort of correct response to everything, but there are also like, you know, I can see the comparison that they're making, because there are also like responses that are not super wrong, but they're less optimal, and so that'll be interesting to get to experience. I'm glad I will have that for the plane ride.
Yeah,
because apparently a proper full playthrough is like somewhere between 20 and 30 hours, so which means that it's probably longer than all of the other Onimusha games combined.
Fireminer is asking how it stacks up to Neo.
I like it better than Neo. Like, what I have played, I like better than what I've played of Neo. I played some of Neo 1 and some of Neo 2. I did not finish either. I liked what I played of them, but bear in mind that I am also the person who least enjoyed like Neo's gear obsession. It's less soulsy than Neo is. Like, it just there's probably a lot of writing I could do about why I like, because it definitely is influenced by modern games like From, but it definitely doesn't feel like a Souls game, and like I probably have to spend a lot of time with the final game to see how I feel from if that feeling remains true. But to justify that conclusion, I'd have to dig pretty deep into it. But in general, the combat encounters were more interesting to me. I would say that like perhaps one of the key things is that it seems to like it's ratcheted down the amount of RPG, again, sort of like Sekiro in that sense. It's ratcheted down the amount of RPG. Like, there's not none, although I know that some of it is blocked off for the demo. Like, you're collecting red souls, which in the old Onimusha game for currency, and you can't use those in the demo. I suspect that they're still currency, but like, by all accounts, the amount of RPG in there is just significantly lighter, and so they've focus more on like action design sensibilities, which I have some appreciation for. But yeah, overall, like Neo is good. I'm not gonna pretend Neo isn't good. But Neo definitely is one of those things that I'm complaining about when I complain that action RPGs have to be like Diablo or Souls now.
Yeah.
Like this at least feels like its own thing. It definitely has it's definitely not like just a modern version of the old Onimusha, so don't run away with the idea that you're going to get that, but it definitely like it feels like someone started with the Isen system from Onimusha and sort of decided, like rightly decided, that was the most interesting thing in the combat, and like built from there to build a more fleshed out combat system around that, and like ratcheted down the amount of Resident Evil, so you get something that's like combat focused and shares like some elements of its cousin Devil May Cry, but like is less over the top and more about like extreme precision, and like really tuned the animation and style to feel more samurai style. So it has like, that's the other thing, is that like none of the Neos end up feeling like samurai games. They are action games in Japan, and they have like a whole bunch of different weapons and all that. But like the, I think if I were to hazard a guess as to what the development staff spent like a while probably working on as like vertical slice and pitch was sword duels, like very specifically, like there's a rival character that you fight in the demo that's like, oh, this is probably like the guy that they were using as sort of their litmus of like, this is the image of what we want the game to evoke.
Okay.
I was very favorably impressed. I would recommend the demo, that anyone try the demo to see how they feel about it. But I personally was very favorably impressed with it. I'm very excited for it to come out in a couple of days.
Yeah, I could say that I didn't finish Neo 1 or 2. I got very far into 1, and yeah, sometimes I would get overwhelmed with having to sift through all the loot and trying to upgrade stuff. Neo 2, I liked that I could just make my own character, but I found it to be significantly harder, especially because there's sections where you're in like the yokai realm and you have to find a specific demon and kill it to cleanse the area, and those areas were absurdly difficult because like your stamina didn't regenerate as quickly, and then there was more of an emphasis on parrying, which I'm not always good at. So that's I didn't end up playing the third one.
One more thing I guess I'll say is that I ended up, one of the things that my brain ended up pulling up for comparisons, and this isn't exact and it's not perfect, but it did give me, because of the way that blocking and parrying work, it did actually remind me a little bit of Metal Gear Rising, in the sense that like the way Metal Gear Rising worked was that parrying and blocking were the same interaction. They were always the same interaction. And so if you fail the parry in the right direction, you would just get a block, which meant that you weren't going to take a ton of damage, but you were like, you weren't at advantage after doing it. And sometimes that's okay. And that's very much a common interaction, at least in Onimusha, is that if you try to parry too soon, you'll just get a block. And like, if you try to parry way too soon, you'll get like kind of a bad block where you'll like, you'll be kind of at disadvantage. You'll lose some stamina, but it ends up with a less punishing interaction, but it's also a less binary interaction. The more precisely you time the parry, and it, like, if you do say like a blade deflect or whatever, a different kind of variant defensive action, you'll get different results, in part based on how you time it, which feels good.
Yeah, I like when block and parry are the same button, and it just depends on timing, like you were just describing. That's a good system for me. If there's a separate button, though, then I'm just going to block every time, because, you know, if there's too much of a risk with the parrying. So I hardly ever did any parrying in Dark Souls, because I would have had to press a different button, and then if it fails, you get hit. So, yeah. And then, but I was going to say that too, that's what I like about Stellar Blade. That's a game where it's the same button, and that's definitely a more forgiving game than Sekiro.
Yeah, this is definitely more forgiving than Sekiro, even aside from the fact that it also just has an easy mode.
Okay. Well, you know, like, what? Now you've sold me. Now it's like, oh, maybe I could give this a try and just lower the difficulty if I have to.
Yeah, okay. You have story and action mode, and the game points out that, like, switching to story mode, you can switch between them at any time, and there's no penalty for doing so.
Excellent.
But yeah, that demo is out on all platforms. Play it on whatever you see fit. It's excellent no matter where you play it.
Good.
And there is apparently, I didn't notice this, but a hidden boss in the demo that opens up in the menu if you manage to perform 10 like true Isens, which a true Isen is one of the ones where you just instantly kill something by hitting attack right as it's about to hit you. But I think it's just a boss from later in the game, so it's not like you're missing out on much if you miss it. But yeah, just very glad for that, because like Onimusha is a series that's meant a lot to me for a very long time. It's one of the first like M-rated games that I begged my parents to be able to play. So it's nice to see it come back and be as fun to me as this demo was. Now bring back three. That might be hard, but we can hope. Anyone remember the Xbox updated port of the original Onimusha? Anyone play that?
I don't think I played it, but I remember that it exists.
Yeah, Genma Onimusha, which only came out on the original Xbox right at launch. Never mentioned again. No future Onimusha game ever came to the Xbox at the time. Like, this one obviously is also on the Xbox, but like at the time, no future Onimusha games came to the platform. And it's just like, this is weird, because like that version has exclusive content that was not, they didn't bother putting in the remaster.
Weird.
I can only assume that the code for Genma was lost.
Probably.
Okay.
Hold on. Fireman has a related question, I think, here.
Oh, okay.
I know that fixed camera ain't popular anymore, but strange how there are so few isometric and semi-isometric action RPG nowadays, especially the non-Diablo variant. You'd think that how iconic East or Onimusha were, there would have been more. They probably fall into the category of too expensive for indies.
I mean, there are a lot of isometric indie games. They're usually done with traditional 3D. They just like will default to that. Like, I think that's most common. Pre-rendering has advantages, and I'd like to see it like return, which I think is what Fireminer's getting at. Like the idea of bringing back pre-rendering backgrounds. I think that there are advantages to that. But I do think that like a lot of the real advantages of that came at runtime. Because you could like pre-render a much higher resolution image, and like you know, the advantage being that it was much simpler than having the computer try to render it in real time. But nowadays, like, yeah, like you mentioned, it's probably too expensive for indies. Like, for an indie to make an image in pre-render that was so computationally expensive that it made sense to pre-render it, it would like balloon the art budget. So you're probably just, for them, like, especially given how people's tastes have moved, where like a lot of people, when the camera is taken out of their control, they get kind of antsy and upset about it. I think that like that's probably part of the reason that this doesn't come back. Like, we're not at a point where like there's a premium on what could feasibly be rendered by a handful of people versus what the target device could render. And it's like there's enough audience resistance to the idea of taking that camera control away from them. I think that like taking camera control away from the audience has value and has purpose, especially in horror. Like, and that is where you generally see like fixed camera angles occasionally make their return, as like true horror games where like you can do interesting cinematographic tricks. Because that's the frustrating thing, is that like when the player is given free control of the camera, there is a degree to which you sacrifice the ability to force their attention to something. and like you play those old horror games, and like the game can really use you know, very conventional traditional 2D art tricks and like filmic tricks to draw the eye to things in specific, and that is gone. Like when people complain about like yellow paint, like that is developers attempting to find a way to assert drawing the eye in a world where the user has full control of the camera.
Yeah, I would say I like pre-rendered camera angles when it's done correctly, when it's done artistically, and the early Resident Evil games did a great job with that, absolutely. But then there are other cases where it's like, it depends on the game, really. It depends on how it's done. That's all. I get frustrated with a lot of old, like, N64 games because of the way the camera works. And, you know, 3D games that came out before twin stick controllers, right? And that, yeah, so like I'm playing Banjo-Kazooie, Banjo-Tooie, and there's times where it's like the camera's fine, but there's other times where it gets stuck or it just changes the view while in the middle of walking or trying to climb on something and I plummet to my doom, that sort of thing. So it has to be done correctly, that's all.
There is always ways for the camera to lose control, even when the player is in control, just because, yes. Like, how does it react to physical objects? Is the camera a physical object? Is it allowed to pass through things? What does it do when it does so? Just all sorts of questions that get raised by that. That, like, for an indie game, like, you know, especially, there is value in removing that question. There is a lot less technical debt that can come with just saying, no, the camera is here. It is always here. You will, like, one of the other things I've noticed, like, I was playing the indie RPG Quartet, and it's pretty good. I haven't gotten far enough to have, like, super strong opinions on it. I've just started one of the characters' games, and, like, it's pretty good. It has a very RPG Maker-y ethos about it, which can be nostalgic and can be kind of off-putting in equal measure, depending upon how I'm feeling. But one of the things I've noticed is that, and this is something I always noticed when I would play RPG Maker games, is there is a temptation to make town screens too big. how to put this? So this is going to be me ranting about like tricks of cinematography. It's actually very because I think it's married to issues that come with being 16:9, that like in the Super Nintendo style that like a lot of like that kind of like pixel art RPG tries to like tacitly is built from. Those games are in 4:3, and there's not a lot to draw your eyes in the periphery of your vision. And when you make that in 16:9, characters that are roughly the same size on screen, or even a little larger, suddenly have a lot on their left and right and not a lot on their north and south. And so towns end up feeling wide and sprawling, and they feel long to walk up and down. Okay. And that affects it makes it different to run around them. And that's like an issue, well, not per se an issue, but it's something that I've been sticking at, that's been sticking at me every time that I have to go into town in the game, because the towns end up being kind of, like there's too much drawing the eye on the left and right more often than not. And it's bothered me a little bit. Yeah. I just have, like, I don't have a solution, and I'm not like, it's not a huge problem, but it does bother me. Cause like, if I look at something like even an RPG I don't super like FF6, the towns are very easy to navigate, and some of that is just there isn't as much lateral space, so there's not as much drawing the eye to false paths. Sorry for that tangent.
No, it's fine. Good. It's all good.
Okay. Well, what's next on the docket?
I don't know if we talked about this before. It's like Platy's trying to plug cassette beasts again.
I have heard good things about it. I haven't needed another Pokemon in my life, and everything that I've ever heard is very Pokemon.
Same here. Like, after playing Legends ZA and the DLC for that, and then
I'm very excited for Wind and Wave, but I think I have enough time to get excited for Wind and Wave.
Yeah.
So that's it. And I got that Nexomon game and barely touched it. And I got this other game on the Switch. It was on sale for like $2. And it's, blatant Pokemon ripoff. And it's like, yeah, that's what I mean. That there are enough of these Pokemon clones on the market now where I can't play them all. And I'd rather just play Pokemon. Yeah.
Plus, there's that Digimon Time Strangers, which is really good as well.
Cool. Oh, yeah. I don't even know how Pokemon-y that is.
It feels more SMT.
Yeah, that's the thing that I gathered based on like it being essentially a sequel to Cyber Sleuth and Hacker's Memory. Two games which I also still have to get more time, put more time.
There's a lot of games.
I picked those up like a year ago because they like every so often they'll go on sale on the eShop for $5, and it's like, I can purchase two video games for $5. But then it's like, I don't have time. But then it's like, but I don't actually have time. Speaking of which, I got Pentiment for $10. I need to get around to spending more time with that. That seems interesting.
Looks very cool.
Yeah.
It's Obsidian as well, right?
Yes, that is an Obsidian title. Don't mess with the steward. Okay. But that's enough of me prattling on.
Fine, we're going to put another question here. About the recent re-release remake of R-Type 3 and Dodonpachi Resurrection are pretty bad. Missing features. The latter even used machine translation to translate non-English languages. I know that Cave is currently in bad financial situation, but is that bad to the point they made a worse port than the PC version released in 2016?
Yeah, like allegedly it has like one new mode, but it stripped out like all of the other content, so it's the Dodonpachi fans I know are not happy. Don't
worry about me. That sounds pretty rough.
Yeah.
And I know nothing about any of those, time. So I can't say anything about
Yeah, the R-Type remake, I only heard of the one for Delta. I don't remember a third Lightning remake, but the Delta one was not good. So yeah, it's a hard time for Shmup fans. It's very hard to like say because like at that point like maybe just don't put in translations, like that would be less insulting. Like it's Dodonpachi, like it has like a page of text, as I recall. Like I saw a translator on Blue Sky pointing out that like when like they had translated some old either Konami or Taito shooter that they had given a rate of like $500 for the entire project. Jeez. Like there, when you have that little text, you really, if you just like seek out an actual translator, you will be able to negotiate very cheap prices. Because it's literally a couple hours work tops. Also, the English translation somehow misspells Oceania. Huh? So that's fun.
Yeah.
Spelled it with an S.
Okay.
What's the other thing I was going to say? So do we want to bring up the... Do we wish to bring up the leak relating to a mysterious New Romancing Saga 3 listing?
Yes, because I want it to be real. I need to wish it to be real. I need it in my life.
So we're going to just popping this back to the original source. A Brazilian site brings up that Romancing Saga 3 Destinies United has been raided in Brazil. Presumably this might just be the follow-up to Revenge of the Seven in terms of being like a proper remake of Romancing... That was a proper remake of Romancing Saga 2. Presumably this would be a proper remake of Romancing Saga 3 for basically all consoles. I hope so. I think it's very possible. But yeah, I felt that we could not leave that unremarked upon.
Yeah.
There is... allegedly a Nintendo Direct coming soon, presumably on the 10th, for those unaware of why that date is speculated. Some material for a new Just Dance leaked, and Ubisoft was like, well, cat's out of the bag, we wanted to share this later, but we were going to announce, like, we'll announce more info about this on September 10th, and it's like, absolutely nothing of significance is announced to be happening on September 10th. Hmm. What the hell are you talking about? It's like, where does Ubisoft typically announce Just Dances at the Nintendo Direct? So it might be a partner showcase. It might be a proper direct. Hard to say. Could I believe either, but I suspect that some sort of direct is happening on the 10th.
I mean,
given that we already know when Sony's thing is, and that's not, and it's not then.
Yeah. I mean, and given the fact that we have a Zelda that's supposed to come out this year that we've seen jack shit of.
Yeah, that would cause me to lean more towards this is a proper direct that will be showing us that. They'll do a last drop of previews for Fire Emblem. They'll show us some more Ocarina of Time remake, give us a proper release date for that. And, of course, the hotly anticipated Just Dance. I would also place even odds on seeing... I would place even odds on seeing a Switch 2 release date sometime in the next 6 months for Assassin's Creed 4 Resynced. I don't particularly care, but I feel like that is like there are even odds that that ends up happening.
Bless you.
Excuse me, but there are a handful of other like titles we have some reason to believe exist that might show up at that. Monster Hunter Wilds on Switch 2.
Excuse me, I just threw up a little in my mouth.
Jeez.
I like how I did an actual sneeze and you just did like your fucking pretend vomit.
Real quick, guys, I'm playing Banjo-Tooie for the first time ever.
Yeah.
And I just walked into this temple and it turned into Doom and Banjo is holding Kazooie like a shotgun and it's fucking awesome.
Yeah. If you're listening to, if you've seen the bits where they're doing the where you can hear, where they're doing like the soccer minigame there.
Yeah.
Like the background noise, you can hear them chanting and what they're chanting is per Grant Kirkhope, the game's composer, they're chanting "Come and have a go if you think you're hard enough." It's a very like British football chant.
Wow.
"Have a go if you think you're hard enough."
That's cool.
If you ever played Banjo-Kazooie, when Mumbo transforms you, he tends to shout Uminaka. And that is because Kirkhope had some sort of like testicular issue at the time, and so was routinely heard to be saying Umi Knackers. Just thought I'd provide some context for the wonderful soundscape of the Banjo games.
Umidaba. Yeah.
Umidaka.
Kumboka in your out.
Let's see. Show notes. Oh yeah. So a game I had brought up once before was Full Metal Schoolgirl, and there's a demo you can play, and it's like a roguelike third person shooter, looter shooter, and you play as, you know, cute girls, anime girls. And yeah, sure. And so it looks like, yeah, see, that had a game key card, but it looks like it is getting a limited run games.
Yeah, it actually had card. No physical U.S. release at all, but limited run games is doing an actual cart, which is awesome. I mean, normally, a lot of times in the Switch days, you'd have to go to Asia to get actual releases of some games. And now we're getting the actual release of the game. That's kind of neat.
That's cool. Someone asking, why has Nisa, Nippon Ichi Software America, stuck to game key cards so far? Seems a baffling decision for a company that sells their own special editions, especially when one such release, Brigadine Abyss, is available in Asia as an actual release. I don't think we ever answered. Oh, that's different. Sorry. Yeah, I don't know.
I'm the one asking the question. That's probably why we didn't answer.
Well, I noticed like a lot of Nisa games are very small, and maybe they just don't want to foot the bill for like a 64 gigabyte cart when the game itself is only 5 or 10. You know, I don't know. That's my thought.
That part has actually changed. I would suspect it's obviously entirely in margin. Like the cheapest you can, like the cheapest you can get is free, but you can't quite get to free on these, but you can absolutely lower the amount that you have to, you can absolutely lower the amount that you're spending on manufacture. And I think that a company like Nisa that one is small and two, has like its parent company and itself have like teetered on the verge of bankruptcy multiple times in the past, is probably very attracted to the idea of doing something that does not, that involves taking on less risk in the manufacturing area. I think that ultimately that's probably a bad move for them, just by dint of the fact that the kinds of people that are buying from them like their physical editions. But yeah. I can see why they're doing it.
Okay. Okay. Oh, and then I just fixed this. It said, I don't think we ever answered our own question on if you could gift a digital Xbox game. And the answer is yes.
Yeah, you can.
I wasn't sure because I've never done it before, but I just checked it just now. And it's like, oh, yeah, there's an option that says buy as gift. And then you specify who you want to give it to, just like on Steam. So, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, unfortunately, the problem now is that you have to assume that your like giftee has an Xbox that they use, which is just a bad bet to make in this day and age. But
yeah, there are games you don't want to gift certain games to a Series S user, I would think. Yeah,
try me, motherfucker.
Sorry. Yeah. Okay. So there's that, and then let's see. Well, there were two things I was going to mention quickly. One of them is, I know you guys don't care about this, but so Sony just put out a new app on the PS5. You can watch live TV on your PS5. And it's similar to like Pluto, or if you have a TV with built-in channels like Samsung TV Plus, LG channels, it's very similar to that. So it is free. But I would say it's...
I've never heard of this thing before.
Right. And so it's...
aren't you pissed off about it? How have you never heard of it?
It's, maybe because it's dead to me.
It's dead to you, yeah. So I would say it's...
No fun.
My boy's a box. No, it's... sir, why do you want to be a big brother? Don't say revenge. Don't say revenge. Revenge? That's it. I'm out of here. No, so I would say it functions much better than my attempts to use LG channels, because on LG channels I would just end up watching some reruns of Johnny Carson and the quality was atrocious and it kept stuttering and buffering. So it's not quite on par with a full-fledged streaming service like Peacock or Hulu, but it's almost as good and it's free. And so there's multiple Crunchyroll channels, so there's a lot of anime. There are dedicated... Yeah, but there are dedicated channels for Death Note, Naruto, and Sailor Moon, if you just want to watch that all day. And then there's a dedicated channel for Community, which I thought was neat. So...
Speaking of things, Sony owns, I'm attempting to avoid as much as possible Sony's like large financial ownership of the U.S. anime industry, because they've fucked me repeatedly, but
yes,
it's nice that they have that.
and so there's also on-demand content as well. But, gee, I really love the show Blood Plus, and gee, Sony owns it, and there is no legal way to watch that show right now. Unless you want to pay absurd amounts of money on a used DVD copy on eBay, or I think all the episodes are on YouTube, although they're always at risk of getting taken down through, you know, copyright. So yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, but it's like
a neat little service that you don't have to pay for. That's all.
When I complain about Sony's largely owning the U.S. anime lock, stock, and barrel, that's the kind of thing I'm complaining about, because they own. Yes. They own and sit on like a ass ton of licenses, because like they don't see a path to profit in them. They've actually just obliterated Crunchyroll's like physical store. You can now only get it at the highest tier of their subscription, and they just like delisted like 2/3 of the anime, like the physical anime you could purchase. It's now mostly for tchotchkes and bullshit.
Yeah.
So like that's the reason that like there are rumors that they're thinking about backtracking on like physical discs. I don't believe them, because this is part of a clear broader trend that they want to,
yes,
that they want to be in the business of like making you pay for these things over and over as they like get decommissioned.
Yeah, because I was going to say what you just said, like they announced they were going to stop making game discs. It's like, okay, but then, well, we're also not making anime discs anymore. We're not selling you any physical stuff. The PS5 Pro was this absurdly overpriced console with no disc drive, which had to be bought separately. So the signs were all there. I don't think they're going to backtrack at this point. I think they've gone in too deep, and I don't think they care, to be honest with you.
Yeah, so. it's clearly and the other thing I'm going to point out, PS5 Pros, like, those sold out in preparation for GTA 6. It's clear that there is, to them, they see that as a validation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to them, that's proof that, like, if the content is desirable enough, it does not matter.
Yeah.
And so, like, I think that's a risky egg, a risky basket to put your eggs in, because, like, GTA 6 is not, is like a, we won't see one like that for at least another 15 years when we get GTA 7. But, like, I do think that, like, internally there is probably some sense of validation to that. Like, look, people kept buying our consoles for GTA. We can keep, like, even like the math they're doing internally is that they care most about getting as much money from their existing users as possible. They've made that clear repeatedly in share calls.
Like, I'd love to be proven wrong. I would love to be wrong about this, but yes. I think that based on the patterns of their behavior, they're like, Sony as a company wants to be a entertainment company, not a hardware IT, hardware R&D manufacturing firm. They want to be an entertainment company, and an entertainment company is most concerned with jealously guarding access to IP, and that is where things like that is where these that's where like these decisions are springing from. It's not just a one-off, like, maybe we can get away with this in one sector. It's a broader internal culture about what they see their best position going forward as being.
Yeah.
The Sony of today wouldn't make DAT players, I'll put it that way.
So that actually kind of ties into the next thing I wanted to mention that I think I talked about before, is the Xbox disc to digital program. Unfortunately, I have not been able to test it yet, and I'm not fully sure why.
Yeah, you have to be an Xbox insider to be able to test it.
Right, but so here's the thing. It rolled out today, and I am signed up as an Xbox insider, and when I turn on my console, there's no indication that this program even exists. I went into the Insider Hub app, no mention of it in there, but what I found out is I'm in the Omega group, and I found one article, only one article that said, oh yeah, it only rolled out to Alpha group so far.
Yeah. So, I would imagine there's different layers of like insider on this one.
Yeah. So maybe it's, so I don't know how many, I don't know how long I have to wait. But I have not gotten access to it yet, but again, this is better than nothing. You know, this is them saying, yeah, pop in your disc.
It's a good world gesture.
Right. Pop in your disc, you get a digital license. If you sell the disc, give it to someone else, and they insert it into their console, they get the license, yours is revoked. That makes sense. No complaints there. So whether or not Project Helix has a disc drive, at least I should be able to insert my current Series X discs into my Series X and then make them playable on PC and other platforms. I'm very excited to see what Project Helix is all about. Although, again, if it's like PS6, if neither of these consoles has
$1,000 system,
exactly. If these are $1,200, $1,500 systems with no disc drives, then fuck it. I'll just buy a new graphics card for that amount of money. But I think it's neat. So some reports are showing, like, Microsoft did not release a full list of all compatible titles, but people are already testing it, already sharing results. It appears that none of the Forza Horizon games are eligible, which is very odd.
That's weird. That's got to be a licensing thing.
Yeah, none of the Assassin's Creed games are working, I guess. But interesting thing is some people inserted discs that are now, like, where the digital copy is delisted, and it did work, which I thought was cool.
That work, so that's bizarre.
That probably comes down to aspects of who the original like owner rights holder is. I would suspect anything with licensing is most likely not going to work. Anything with any sort of like, if the company involved is interested in selling you that game again, it's probably not going to work. So like Ubisoft needs money out of the couch cushions, so they're probably not interested in you being able to claim an entitlement for Assassin's Creed 4 when you could be buying Resynced right now. But yes, I would suspect that like that those two things are going to be the biggest the biggest like things, the deciding factors right now.
Yeah, so I tried the Metaphor Re Fantasio disc and nothing happened, and I tried the Saints Row disc and nothing happened. So clearly there's an additional step to activate it, and I just have to wait, even though I am an insider. I guess just gotta wait.
You're
so
wrong tier. You're not insider enough.
I guess not. Or it's probably because I just signed up for 2 days ago in anticipation of this, and they probably knew that, and they're just saying, ah, ha, ha, you loser. Yeah.
So I was looking through the FAQs, so I was trying to see if there was a list of compatible games, and there was an interesting note in there about possibly having to reinsert your disc in the future, not because, like, I don't know, someone else uses it, just as like a future check.
Yes.
Yeah. Xbox One is back, baby.
which makes me think if this is for a future all digital console, that's
curious. How would that going to work?
How will that work?
Yes. Exactly. So they're finally doing what they wanted to do with Xbox One, it looks like, but this is probably better, though.
I was going to say, this is way better than what they were suggesting.
Yeah.
Because what they were suggesting...
Because your disc version will still just work.
Yeah, you can still just play your disc version. You can play it offline and...
Yeah.
Yeah. If something happens and you lose your disc to digital thing, yeah, you can just pop the disc in. Or if it somehow gets deactivated while you're offline, you can, just put the disc in.
This
is a much better program.
Yeah, so then the only issue is it's also like, okay, well, I guess I won't be able to trade the Series X towards the next console just in case I have to reinsert discs.
Optional disk drive.
Yeah, so that's one thing that I do find annoying with the idea of the next-gen consoles just not having disk drives. Like, well, great, now I can't trade my old console to mitigate the cost in any way. But
we'll have to see, because I mean, we don't who the hell knows what the next project is. Maybe
it does seem like they're trying to use this as a vector to like differentiate themselves.
Yeah.
Oh, I can spit fire eggs now. That's cool.
Oh,
sorry.
Oh, yeah, get used to finding a lot of different egg types. Yeah.
But I mean, yes,
like, this is really
I understand, like, physical games mostly not mainstream anymore outside Nintendo, but ceding that like physical space to Nintendo seems bizarre.
That's a bad long-term strategy.
Yeah, it seems very, very stupid.
Well,
repeatedly, what Sony has done has been ceding parts of the market that they don't consider profitable enough to be worth pursuing, and if you do that too much, you end up turning yourself into a niche. They've already ceded like an entire territory. They've basically decided that Japan's not worth pursuing anymore. And that is ultimately to blame for why, like, a lot of things that were de facto PlayStation only games are no longer de facto PlayStation only games. And now, like, ceding the notion of the physical market to Nintendo and Microsoft puts them in a position that I think is more vulnerable than they want. And it's the only reason I can think of for why they might double back on the disc thing, because it does put them in a very vulnerable position to like have, because suddenly Microsoft especially, but both Nintendo and Microsoft have a market differentiation that did not exist before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was going to say, when I was researching disc to digital, I think I saw a statistic, something like 60-something% of digital sales are now Nintendo. And
digital sales?
Physical sales.
Yeah.
Sorry, I said that wrong. So something like 60-65% of all physical sales are now Nintendo consoles. 20 or 25% is Sony, and only like 6% is Microsoft.
This is why you would see like Microsoft, like Xbox versions of games would just not have physical releases at all. The other thing I was gonna say relating to that is that, yeah, and that, you know, to some extent what you end up with that is that like there's just not a lot of shelf space for, like, there's less and less shelf space for any given console, which makes it harder to sell it. And like, yes, more and more people buy things online, but there is still enough of the like audience that purchases things from a big box retail that you do need some shelf presence as like just a part of how you sell your console. Like, that's part of your advertising.
Yeah. And then, well, actually, what you just said there, there were two Best Buys somewhat close that both closed, but they just opened a new one, like, maybe 10 minutes away from where I live. And I went there for the first time, and it was so, like, I haven't been to GameStop in years because the one in town closed, and I haven't been to Best Buy in years because the, you know, the two that were both 20 minutes or 20 or 30 minutes away are gone. But it was so refreshing, though, to go in there and, like, I miss this, you know, like, all the cool stuff you can look at, and I'm looking at the video games, and I ended up buying a new microwave, by the way, and actually it was on sale for Labor Day, and it just barely fit where I needed it to go, which was great.
Oh, yeah, I saw you posting about that.
Yeah, so I was like, always measure things, because I'm like, well, gee, my current microwave is 11 and a half inches. There's a little bit of space above it. I think a 12-inch microwave will fit, and it did, sort of.
It did, but it shouldn't have fit that. It shouldn't have been that tight.
No. And it does work, too, by the way. It's much better. And the old one was 10 years old and had paint chipping and rusting and or burn marks or something. It's like, this is an accident waiting to happen. So then I was looking at the video games, though, and for whatever reason, the PS5 copy of Pragmata was $5 cheaper. I'm like, all right, you know, that's a no-brainer. Let me just grab that while I'm here. Yeah, and I played that a little bit, and it gets off to a very good start, and I'm very, you know, I played the demo, obviously, but yeah, I'm very excited to get more into that, but it's like, yeah, it was just so great to be in a Best Buy and just, but the thing is, they don't sell movies anymore.
Yeah, you know? Like if, yeah. Those are the like owning physical movies and shows has become a boutique. You have to go find someplace that stocks them.
Yes,
Walmart.
Yeah, Walmart.
Walmart still deals a lot in physical media of that type.
So, but that's what I find ironic about Best Buy is they don't sell CDs, but they sell vinyl records. And yep, they sell
that's where the market went.
Yeah,
they sell Blu-ray players. They sell televisions. They don't sell movies.
Don't sell anything content for the Blu-ray players.
I can kind of understand for the Blu-rays, like because it's a more niche market now. It doesn't make a lot of sense to like what exactly do you stock? Yeah, maybe the new movies, but like people won't want to just go online and like buy the movie they're looking for. It's a lot easier to do online.
Yes. So.
And yeah, I mean, Walmart's a good place to go if you're looking to get like the newest movie or anime. You can get Studio Ghibli movies there for a good price.
That's good. Yeah. Like if an anime is particularly popular, Walmart has always been good at stocking it, which is why I used to get, which is why in the mid 2000s I would get Bleach and Naruto seasons from them.
Nice. Okay.
Walmart is a weird store.
Sure,
I haven't been there in a long time, but then Barnes and Noble just closed nearby.
Sorry.
That's a shame. And Barnes & Noble actually just opened near him, near me.
It closed because they opened one in my town.
Yeah,
you did this on purpose.
If you guys don't know, he lives about 30 minutes away from me, like a few towns over. So,
yeah, I always figure. That's why you two played Bow and Wonderworld together because the wheels is broken on the inside.
Why did we do that? That was atrocious.
You're the one that chose to do it.
I know. I thought it was like this is going to be like a lark, and it was just like,
You're the one who bought it and brought it over here. I had nothing to do with that.
Sorry, I had no idea what he was talking on for.
What did we play the last time you were here? I don't remember.
Doom. We played some harder Doom scenario and got our asses kicked.
Yeah, it was the new scenario they added with the latest Series X and S update. It's fucking hard. Like, there's this level. There's just you're just in this like river of blood, and it's absurd. And with two people, I think they summon more monsters. And yeah, so we tried playing that, and then I don't remember what else we played though. Oh, we did that Capcom Fighting Collection that had all the Darkstalkers games on it.
God.
Ooh. Yeah. So we tried playing Cyberbots and the other one, Red Earth. Yeah.
Red Earth was not meant to be played like a normal fighting game.
No. So we tried playing both of those and we're like, this isn't great. We did a little bit of Hyper Street Fighter 2 and the Darkstalkers games. Yeah. And then
Gem Fighters. We did Gem Fighters.
Yeah.
The Gem Fighter remix is so much fun.
Yeah.
We did do that one. And then I haven't tried the Phantom Brave game yet that you sold me. And then there was a couple other games. Yeah.
The first one, I think, is still one of Nice's underrated games.
Absolutely, yeah. I played the Wii version of that when it came out.
Yeah. It's got a good story, yeah, and the combat is different. It's neat.
That's really, yeah.
Is that the Wii one, or is that the PSP one?
PSP one, the Bermuda Triangle. Okay. The Wii one was just called Phantom Brave.
Okay.
I swear it had some other title.
Nope.
Right, so then just one other thing on the topic of physical media. Like I mentioned before that I was going through all of my old stuff, like movies and books.
The subtitle is We Meet Again. On Wii.
Okay.
Oh, fuck off.
I knew that.
No wonder I forgot that.
No, so just going through all these old boxes and finding old stuff and getting rid of a lot of old stuff. But like just finding some DVDs I forgot about, and I'm now in the process of copying them to my hard drive. And just like a lot of concert DVDs that never got re-released on Blu-ray. They're not on streaming services. Maybe you can buy them digital. Maybe you can find bits and pieces on YouTube. But like I found this DVD and it was a documentary of Coachella. Came out in 2006, and I put it in and I'm like, this is great. Like there's like one song from each band, but it's like a lot of bands. It's the Mars Volta, it's Oasis, it's I think Beck is in there, Jack White is in there, Arcade Fire, you know, a lot of indie stuff, alternative stuff, punk stuff, Radiohead. And like, so my brother was here when I had it on. He, you know, he stopped by and we were watching it a little bit. And then like Iggy Pop comes on and does I Want to Be Your Dog. And it's amazing. But it's like, we looked it up and it's like, at that time, Coachella tickets like would have been like $85 a day or something like that for the whole, you know, and then like 180 for like the whole weekend or something. But then, like, nowadays, it's corporate-owned, and it's pop music, it's rap music, and it's, like, $500 to $600 for the whole weekend, and it's like, what happened, you know? Yeah. But just a really neat DVD to find and to watch again. But it's just like, man, like, music used to be better, I don't know. Maybe I'm just getting old.
I just love corporations. They make everything better.
Yeah, and then like Bonnaroo used to be jam bands. What the fuck happened? You know, it used to be the Disco Biscuits and the String Cheese Incident and all these other cool jam bands.
Making these fucking
names. I don't like any of these jam bands. Why would you remind me of the String Cheese Incident, the Grateful Dead?
They're awesome.
Okay, so okay. Mentally, I'm done, and my throat is starting to hurt. So we're gonna have to start pulling.
All right, let's rapid fire through some things.
Okay.
I have to eat crow officially because Joe mentioned the Evercade and I said that's stupid. And now I'm like Evercade fan number one. So Joe, you were right. I was wrong.
Yes. So when he was here hanging out, I asked him to bring the Evercade because I thought he had the VSR that you hook up to the TV. He just had the handheld. So he showed it to me and it looked neat. But I was like, gee, didn't I mention Evercade on the podcast a long time ago, and didn't somebody make fun of me? And so here we are. Because I remember I brought it up and you guys were like, Evercade, buying cartridges, what are you talking about?
I don't think we said it like that, but
no,
but whatever. Fine, you win this round.
Oh,
Evercade's awesome. There's one collection that has some neat looking RPGs on it that I was looking at on eBay, and it was like $150, and it's like, fuck, man.
Yeah.
And then they put out a re-release of it like several days after that, after years of it being rare. So I got it for $40.
Wow.
Good shit. And I've been playing Duke Nukem on it, which is cool. Evercade rules, but yeah, I'm hoping for more weird RPGs. Okay, Fireminer's yelling at us. We have to rapid fire through a few things he put in chat, and then we'll close this thing out. The former president of NIS and creator Disgaea recently gave an interview in which he said that Disgaea came directly out of the financial failure of La Pucelle Tactic, and he thought that if NIS would go down as a company, they better put everything they like in a game. When you played the original Disgaea, did you ever have the feeling that this game was a hodgepodge?
I guess. I mean, I haven't played the first one in a long time, and I never finished it. I made the mistake of starting with 3, and then it was really hard to go back and play 1 and 2. And even the Disgaea 1 Complete, yeah, they updated the character sprites and the graphics a little bit, but it's mostly the same game. There's a lot of different moving parts in that game, and ultimately the issue I had, like, early in the game is that I just didn't feel like I ever had enough money. You know, spend so much money on healing and reviving characters.
Yeah, I think ultimately the thing that makes it hard to tell is that, like, the failure of La Pucelle makes it harder to tell what they pilloried from it.
Mm. Yeah.
La Pucelle has seen release occasionally, but it's nowhere, like, it came out after Disgaea in the U.S. because Disgaea had done well, and suddenly there was a use for trying to sell it in the U.S. But ultimately, like, one of the things that, like, makes it clear when something's been reconstituted from something else is you have to have seen the something in its original context.
Yeah.
I think it does a good job of, like, it feels holistic enough that you wouldn't immediately assume that it had been reconstituted from a bunch of assets that they had lying around.
Yeah. And I initially thought that Phantom Brave was going to be exactly like Disgaea, and it wasn't. And ultimately I realized that was a good thing, even though at the time I remember thinking, oh, it's not quite Disgaea. It's like, yeah, but it's doing its own thing. That's good.
It's kind of better than the first Disgaea.
You know what? It is. Yeah.
For a few years, they tried to make Phantom Brave's gameplay system work, because they then followed it up with Makai Kingdom, because Makai Kingdom was, like, mixing the gameplay style of Phantom Brave with something that looked more like Disgaea to see if that would work, and it didn't, so they gave up.
Okay.
Like, Makai Kingdom, you played as, like, a demon overlord that had been turned into a book.
Yes.
And he couldn't fight for himself. You had to have him invite other characters to fight for him.
So okay. Twisting around how it was done in Phantom Brave.
Yep.
Never got around to playing that one. It did not seem as well regarded as most of their games. Okay, more rapid fire questions. Metal Gear Solid Twin Snakes is lambasted because the new cutscenes don't fit, but what about new music that doesn't fit? The PSP. Oh god, you just made it. Scroll down! PSP port of Persona 1 has some new Yumi Kawamura tracks. They are some of her best work with Persona, but they also don't fit with the rest of the soundtracks.
Like, that can be a problem. Like, I'll sidebar and say that I think that the cutscenes are the best thing about Twin Snakes. The problem with Twin Snakes is that the MGS2 gameplay doesn't fit with MGS1's design. But, as for this, like, music can be very important for setting atmosphere, but one of the problems that you run into is that, like, a lot of music ends up receding into the background, so a lot of people don't really notice it, so it can be hard to tell why the scene feels wrong now. Personally, I ended up playing a shameful amount of Persona 1 PSP with no sound because I didn't have headphones with me when I was playing it.
So I don't actually know how badly it misfires.
Yeah. I don't know. I never played the original Persona 1. I briefly played the PSP 1 and couldn't tell you what might or might not have been missing or added or wrong with it. But yeah.
Ultimately, the music change was one of the only changes. They added some additional cutscenes, and that was kind of it. Other than like reverting all of the localization changes that had been made in the original PS1 release. Okay, next one.
Idea Factory and NES know just how many fans would buy their games, but do they know how much each of these people would pay? Idea Factory shot themselves in the foot with the constant Neptunia re-releases. Were they that constant?
I mean, they've re-released / remade Neptunia 1, 2, and 3 like 3 times.
That's true.
And I think that there's a reason that that series ended up kind of like the main continuity of that series kind of went away for a long time. Yeah. What I would say is, I think they don't. I think they're trying to feel it out. We might see them return to using physical cards, but it'll depend partly on how much they think people will buy. Because, like, that's the thing, is that, like, how many of the people who say, I don't want a key card, buy the game digitally afterwards? To them, that's 100% a victory.
Mm. Okay.
Because they make more money off of that. So it becomes, what's the margin on their special editions? How much is that making up for it? Hard to say. They're the only ones that would have that information. So if those special editions go extinct on Switch 2, that'll be your answer.
Yeah.
So when I said, I'll overcome these pesky game key cards by just buying it digital, I was doing what they wanted. Great.
Like, yes. if you were still buying the game, they don't give a shit how you're buying it. If anything, again, like purchasing digital, that's fine.
Yeah. Like, okay.
Capcom allegedly initially, essentially treated the key cards as digital sales. Like that was how they grouped them for their earnings reports. But yeah, like to them, it's just like, oh, that means that you bought it in a place where we have fewer partners to split the revenue with. Good.
Yeah. Okay.
Even like, the nicer corporations are still fucking annoying.
Like, I mean, if I'm them and I'm like Nisa trying to survive, yeah, sure, whatever, man, whatever caused you to buy the damn game.
Yeah,
like that's the thing. You cannot like the most you could do is to purchase a key card secondhand. That's the most you could do while still obtaining the video game. But
Yeah. I really like my Disgaea 7 Collector's Edition, you know, with the nice steelbook case and the tea mug that I still use to drink tea out of. It's got all the male protagonists from the series. So, yeah, no. And then, no, just to kind of quickly go back to what we were saying before, I mean, I love Nippon-Ichi's physical editions and, you know, unfortunately, because they're game key cards on Switch 2, and I would prefer just to buy them on PS5, you know, get the
well, that will last.
Exactly. So they're gonna have to think about that. But I'll buy them in whatever format I have to, because they're just
buy them on Xbox.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't think 7 made it to Xbox. No,
none of them have made it to Xbox.
Yeah, I don't think Nathan ever made an Xbox game.
What was I gonna say? May not have actually hurt their. I think this was a question I put into
bottom line.
Their bottom line yet, because those people that are like, I don't want to buy a key card. Mostly, there's been a collector's edition either for Switch 1 or for PS5, and those people probably bought those.
We brought this.
I'm guessing that because their Switch 2 keycard special editions always seem to be in stock, unlike some other editions. I don't actually have any information. FYI.
We've got, like, I'm going to briefly say that that's probably true. I suspect they might actually manufacture more of the Switch ones, but the other thing I was going to say was I don't think anything ever did was a more free PR win for Nintendo on the key cards than Sony doing what they're doing, because it suddenly made it seem like, well, at least they're trying.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I know everyone blames Nintendo on that, but for me, it always seems like, oh, this is what other publishers want.
Yeah, this is them trying to meet you halfway.
Yeah.
But... okay, any more before we...
There's something in here about 2X KO, but we'll save that for another time.
Yeah,
it's not even an RPG. R.I.P.
I don't know anything
about that. Probably, I could probably rapid-fire that. Just hand it to me.
It's Riot recently announced that they would end development of 2X KO. I didn't even know they had completed initial development.
Yeah, when did they start development?
Development in like 2016, and it officially released at 1.0 like at the beginning of this year.
Okay.
The game was truly made for fighting game nerds, so it ran into the problem of the number of fighting game nerds are actually not that big.
Yeah.
I mean, that could be part of it, but also...
I don't want to play anything made by Riot.
No,
to be honest with you.
I just want to see like what's the Venn diagram of like League of Legends fans and fighting game fans. Like,
yeah,
I'm not sure where that stands.
Don't know, and I think all three of us are kind of not interested in. Fighting Souls,
sorry, give me a
Tokan,
moment. Fire alarm.
Whatever. Yeah. What?
Did you say there's a fire alarm?
Just a smoke alarm going off. Give me a moment.
Okay.
Oh. Okay.
But we'll answer this weird question then real quick. If it's a limited edition, what is stopping a publisher to put an 18+ adult art book in the collector edition? Does your ESRP judge the miscellaneous items that come with your game?
I don't know.
I don't know.
I want to say my old Skyrim art book might have one little picture, might have a nipple in it one page.
Did that come with the game? Because I think he's asking like actual materials that come with the game.
No, it came with the collector's edition.
Okay.
And there was, but I mean, it might have been a statue of Nocturna or something. I don't know. So, you know, yeah. So, I mean, come to think, I'm just saying, I have an art book that came with a Blaze Blue game. I have an art book that came with a Senran Kagura game. I have the art book that came with Dragon's Crown, but there's no actual nudity or sex in them. So I don't know that I could answer this, but... I mean,
my guess would be the collector's edition, no. Maybe the regular edition, but I honestly don't really know. And it may just be like this is a thing that hasn't come up.
Yeah.
But I mean, interesting. Considering they get like a rating, we get so many like leaks of games from ratings. Like they're obviously rating it before. Necessarily there's a physical product, so I really don't think they look at that. And I think this question has just not necessarily come up.
Yeah.
But that's a really good one. Who the hell knows? Has anyone heard about a Super Famicom game called Ancient Magic? That game is getting a re-release on Switch. I have never heard of that.
Oh, the only other thing I just thought of was I did buy a digital copy of Honey Pop a long time ago that did come with an art book that does have nudity in it, but that was digital. You know? That wasn't physical, so I don't know. Okay. No, it's a good question. I just... like I said, I don't know that it's become an issue yet. Yeah.
see, I asked this question in the pandemic, but in light of the Kingdom Hearts 4 show, I just gotta ask the question. The fact that Pixar and Disney have way less animated hits in the last 10 years than they used to, does it affect Kingdom Hearts in any way, or because Disney has such an extensive catalog that Square Enix won't have to worry that they'll run out of a new world to create before Kingdom Hearts is over? I mean, I don't even think that they would just, like, use whatever hits. I feel like for worlds in Kingdom Hearts, they're going to want to use, like, films that have been out for a long time and, like, had an actual impact. Like, trying to think of a good example. Like, they're not just going to do, what the hell is the Pixar movie come out? They're not going to do a Gato world in Kingdom Hearts 4 just because that's the new Pixar movie that's coming out. They're going to use, like, something like WALL-E.
Well, at this point, they're doing Coco, and that's kind of old now.
Example, yeah.
So, and then it took them until 3 to do Toy Story, so... I don't think they're ever going to run out of material there, no.
The only odd one I would think in there is, like, Big Hero 6, which I don't think it was... Not that it was a bomb or anything, I believe it was a success, but I don't think that one's had, like, the same cachet as a lot of the other ones that are usually in Kingdom Hearts. What are the chances of Star Wars showing up in Kingdom Hearts?
I doubt it.
I don't think they're going to do those. Like, I don't think they're going to do Marvel, even though,
yes, no.
Big Hero 6 is technically a Marvel property. But I don't mean, like, they're not going to do, like, Big Marvel or Big or Star Wars. I don't think those really make sense.
No. So
now the question is, when are we going to get the most stupid crossover of crossovers and have a Kingdom Hearts Magic the Gathering set?
Oh, I was reading that Square Enix had to... They had to hire people to try... or somebody had to go through all the Kingdom Hearts lore and try to make sense of it.
Yeah, that checks out.
Because they're like, what are we doing? Yeah. So, yeah, and that's what I mean. As long as we're only getting one Kingdom Hearts game per decade at this point, then I don't think they're in danger of running out, no.
I think there's some questions in the show notes we didn't go over to last night. PS2 remake of East 3 just got an English patch. Don't really like East 3. Just play Oath and Tralgana. But I guess that is kind of neat that someone did that, so nice to have that option. Some company in Japan is trying to make a mini console for the PC-88, but have to delay the effort to get all the testing out and getting the approval for the rights holder. I can't imagine either task being easy. That sounds nutso, but good luck to them.
Yeah, I don't know why you would do that. I've only ever played two PC-88 games, and they weren't bad, but you'd have to localize those, right? Because I don't want to play those RPGs in Japanese. I can't read.
Well, I'm guessing this is only for Japan at this point.
Yeah.
Okay. It's a Japanese company. Let's see what else. Someone discovered a canceled Quake 4 expansion on a hard drive in an old PC they bought. Is Quake 4 bad? Is it good? Is it just there?
I own it. I never played it. It looks like it's using the same graphics engine as Doom 3.
Interesting.
Yeah. Which I believe is fully open source now as well. The Doom 3 engine. Actually, I think all the Doom's source codes are out there now.
Except 2016.
Yeah, the best one.
Yeah. I think, so, is Quake 3 open source?
I don't know.
I would like to play some Quake 3. We should play some Quake 3.
Yeah, I think I have those games on Steam. I bought the QuakeCon bundle a long time ago, and there's a lot of stuff in there that I played or didn't play. I have yet to play any of the Commander Keen games, but I did get like Wolfenstein, and actually that's probably how I got Hexen and Heretic and Heretic 2. Or no, maybe that, I don't know if that was in there. Hold on. Yeah, so I've got Heretic, Hexen, okay, and Hexen 2. Okay. I wish Hexen 2, like, I know I can do like Skull Tag and stuff like that with it, but I wish that Hexen 2 would get like a modern release. I believe this is just like a DOS emulator or something. DOS box. Yeah. Alright.
I was hoping that would follow up after I did Hexen and Heretic remastered. I was hoping they were going to do Hexen 2 as the follow up.
Yeah.
And it never happened.
Nope.
Well, I guess there's still time. What? What engine are those games even in?
I don't know.
Okay, let's find out.
We just lost... We lost Dave in the chat, so I don't know if we want to wait for him to come back to do the...
Yeah, we can keep going. Bugs. For a few minutes.
Okay.
Hexen 2... Raven's Remaster. Modified Quake engine. Okay, so we've had Quake... remastered for a while.
Yeah.
Hexen was commercially unsuccessful with sales slightly above 30,000 units. Oh, God.
That's bad. No wonder it didn't get
I don't know how old that quote is.
Yeah.
2003. So I don't know what they've done with it since then.
Okay.
Hexen 2 remastered? Any rumors out there? No. No, come on, Night Dive Studios. No, Night Dive. Finish your work on Thief first. That's more important.
Yeah.
Yes, more questions.
We do.
I think Square Enix once had a dungeon crawler game on the MSX or PC-98 that clearly took some inspiration from Star Wars. I could see that. I've already asked about merchandising antagonists. The thing is, you can just look at Darth Maul and Sephiroth to see why people like them. There are more than a few merchandises of Watto. Do your kids want to learn math? There's a Watto math book. How often do you see unlikable characters being merchandised? If they look cool, all the time.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that a lot of the old like action figures, like Bebop and Rocksteady, were popular characters. Shredder was popular. So for some reason, my brain is just going to 90s action figures right now. But it's like... Of course you wanted Skeletor because he was awesome. You know, of course you wanted Shredder action figures and Cobra, you know. So I don't know. I think where I'm going with this is that there's cases where you'll just see every character. And what would happen sometimes is you'd go to the toy store and you would see the only action figure in stock was the one character that nobody liked. There'd be like 10 of those and none of the others. And that was always quite annoying. I don't know. But, yeah, how often do you see unlikable characters being merchandised? I mean, I don't know. Everybody likes, like, I think I would go back to the old saying, like, every Pokemon is somebody's favorite, you know? Even Whooper. Even the weird ones.
Wobbuffet.
Even Wobbuffet. No, I want you to make an arc, okay? And I want you to have two of each Pokemon. Okay, an arc with two Pokemon. Got it. No, two of each Pokemon. Even Whooper, especially Whooper.
Even Mudkip?
Especially even Magikarp?
Dude, Magikarp evolves into a fucking dragon.
That's true. That is, yes, this is true. Magikarp's best feature is the fact that he turns into Gyarados. Yep. So right now in Banjo-Tooie, I've been transformed into a dynamite switch, and every time I blow something up, I lose health, and I don't know what it wants me to do right now, and I can't remember how to get back to the girl who can turn me into a bear again. Oh well. So.
You'll be fine.
Yeah, I'll figure it out, but I kind of don't feel like playing anymore right now. Well, there's Mumbo's hut. Oh, I'm so stupid. Every time I die, do you know where it respawned me? Right outside of the girl's hut. And all I had to do was turn around and go back in to get untransformed. I'm so stupid. Okay.
What else you got, Fire Miner? The Phantom Menace merchandise train was crazy. Yes, it was. No movie since then have every named character being turned into a figure, and that is not to mention other types of toys. Suppose that is how you let a property sit still for over a decade to mesh itself into the public consciousness before making the big catch. Marvel toys now have difficulty selling because new films just keep coming out and don't have time to stew. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember when Phantom Menace came out, my sister got me a cup that looked like Anakin's head, you know, wearing his helmet during the pod racing scene. And my immediate response, without even thinking, was, oh, cool, now I get to make him crash. So, yeah. She's like, well, that's not really why I bought it, but I'm glad you like it. I'm like, oh, yeah, it's awesome. I'll totally drink out of it, and then I'll slam it into the wall. Yeah, so. And, of course, Phantom Menace gave us the double red lightsaber toys. I knew somebody who had that. Good times. Although I just had the green or blue one. I was in college walking around campus with a lightsaber attached to my belt, and people thought it was cool, and that was awesome. Yeah, they'd be like, is that a... I know, they'd be like, is that a lightsaber? I'm like, yeah. Oh, that's awesome. I'm like, phew, I thought I was going to get my ass kicked by a bunch of frat boys. Yeah.
My friend in college showed me pictures of when he was a kid. He was a kid. He and his dad camped out of the theater to wait for the Phantom Menace screening.
Oh, man.
I was in high school when that movie came out.
I was still in middle school. Remember when they released the Star Wars themed cans of Coke or Pepsi, and you wanted to try to get a golden Yoda can, but of course you never did. Yeah.
I do not remember that, actually.
Oh. Yeah, no, there was... Yeah, you got these Star Wars themed cans with different characters on them. And yeah, if you got a golden Yoda can, you won like $5,000 or something like that. I don't know.
That's cool.
But then my sister had a bunch of friends who... they made their own version of Phantom Menace. And so at one point, they're having trouble, like, they're getting ready for a fight. And he's like, oh, well, we've got our special Fred Eye can of mace. And it was a can of Coke with Mace Windu on it. And then they fought an army of lawn chairs and lost. Yeah, they had fun. Bunch of theater kids, I guess. But everything was Fred Eye instead of Jedi. And they had,
of course,
they had lightsaber battles, and they accidentally broke their Darth Maul's red lightsaber. And at one point in the middle of fighting Darth Maul, him and Qui-Gon or Obi-Wan both get tired and then decide to go eat some fried chicken. Yeah, it was bizarre. Just random things I remember. Oh, there's more questions in the show notes, unless we got them all. Oh.
We hit all those, I think.
Nice.
College of Mine actually bought a Dune 2 popcorn bucket and put it up as a New Year lottery giveaway as a joke. It's strange how popcorn buckets are new collector's items. Well, however, those theaters got to make money. Yes.
Yeah. There was a... I remember when the Dune popcorn bucket came out and it, you know, looked like a sandworm.
Yeah.
And of course, the joke on SNL is that people were going to be using it for other purposes. Men were going to be doing you know what with it. Yeah. And it's like, I don't see that happening.
I don't know what. Tell me more.
Yeah.
Tell me all
the joke. The joke on Saturday Night Live was that men were going to stick their penises inside
you
the
You didn't have to say it.
Buckets.
We all got it. My God.
No, I'm just giving you a hard time now because... Yeah. Okay, what am I doing here? I will play as Mumbo and I will move this rock. Levitate Jiggy Boulder. Ikum Bokum, Ikum Bokum. Oh, wow, this is exciting. This is an RPG, right? Sure.
Banjo-Kazooie? Yeah, that's an RPG.
So I just really hope I get access to this to digital thing. Although somebody did say the Rare Replay disc worked, but then again, half the games in that collection are digital downloads anyways. So.
Yeah, it was not a great disc, actually. Because like half the games on there, it's just like this is the digital version that was already out, and it's also not on the disc.
Yeah. So you get Xbox 360 versions of Banjo-Kazooie, Banjo-Tooie, Nuts and Bolts, Perfect Dark, Perfect Dark Zero. Yeah. Viva Pinata, but they did get X enhanced at one point, so that was nice.
With what?
No, they just upscaled the resolution to 4K.
Is that necessary?
No.
Is that useful?
But I like. Yes, I like it.
Explain.
Oh.
I need a bulleted list of notes why it's better.
I don't know. It just is. I like it. Everything's a little sharper, and I think the performance is better. Maybe. And I don't know.
Is Perfect Dark Zero better? Or is it still...
Oh, no. That is one of the worst games I've ever played, I swear to God. I actually made it to like the fourth or fifth mission, and it was like, why am I still playing this? It's so bad. Like, it plays like it's from a company that never made a first-person shooter before, even though it's their third one. Like, I mean, it's so simple.
Who knows how many people that worked on, like, GoldenEye were even left at Rare at that point, to be fair.
That is true, yes. So. Okay, well. Yeah. Ooh. I'm playing as Mumbo, and don't know what they want me to do. Yeah, I find that a little annoying. In the first game, Mumbo just transforms you into some type of animal or object. And now in this one, you switch to Mumbo and have to use his powers on certain things. And then it's just like, oh, well, I can't find where you want me to use it. And then you have to go all the way back to his hut to transform back, which is also annoying.
Fireman says we should take a break. You're not my mom. My mom would also tell me to take a break.
There have been more console recompilations on PC lately. Who wants to play Diddy Kong Racing on the PC? Oh, I sure do.
As long as it's not AI generated.
Yeah, so I think he's referring to that new DK64 recompile.
Oh yeah,
that explicitly
is that
says
one of the good ones. Oh yeah, no, that was one of the good ones. Yes,
that's the one that explicitly said no AI was used in the production of this product. Yeah, I don't have the patience for this game right now. I don't know. Well, let me I guess I'll start doing my plug and we'll
Raziel
see if
only open doors when he's in physical form. Is that a thing?
I don't know.
Game? Have you played Soul Reaver?
No.
Okay.
I watched someone else play it and it looked neat. I'm watching you play it, and it's like, even though it's a PS1 game, it's like, it kind of looks fun. Yeah.
It's definitely different.
Yeah. Oh, it's not like, like it's the first Legacy game. It's not like that at all. That's like a Diablo style game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just like some kind of mix of Tomb Raider and Zelda, I would say.
Yep. All right. So, let's see. Yeah, so I beat Banjo-Kazooie finally for the first time in my life. Because after I did that whole board game quiz show section, I had to go get more music notes and puzzle pieces to unlock the final boss fight, and then she kicked my ass like 6 times, even though I had 8 hit points. So that's when I went back and got all the notes and all the puzzle pieces and all the honeycomb pieces and was able to get 16 hit points, and then I won, and then I started Banjo-Tooie, which I already mentioned during this episode.
Sorry about that. I had a quick second to move on to treat.
Oh, Jesus.
No worries.
So we just... Oh, that's not good. So we just... I was just going to go into my plug here. So, yeah. And then I've also... I got Pragmata and played, like, maybe the first half an hour of that, and that's fun, so I want to keep playing that.
You were in for a ride, sir. Enjoy.
Absolutely. No, I'm looking forward to it.
1,000.
Yep. And let's see. What? Else? Oh, yeah. So just briefly, I did play the Call of Duty Modern Warfare 4 beta. It's open.
RPG.
It has an RPG style progression system in multiplayer. But I'm bringing it up because it's the first one in how many years that's on a Nintendo console. So I did try the Switch 2 version, and it was about what I expected. It was just noticeably worse than the other consoles because Activision is fucking lazy. Because we know what the console's capable of, right? We've seen Metroid Prime 4. We've seen so many other games that look and run great. So I no idea why the campaign was capped at 30 FPS while still looking like ass. And the multiplayer was 60, but horrible texture pop-in. So I switched over to the Xbox version, had some fun with that last night and today. Don't know that I would want to spend $70 on it when it comes out, but that is something I've been playing.
It was still Call of Duty.
Yeah, so it is what it is. It plays just like every other Call of Duty game. I prefer the Modern Warfare games over Black Ops, but if you like it, you like it. If you don't, you don't. It's more the same. So then, on my RP Gamer streams on Tuesday and Thursday nights from around 10 p.m. to around 12 a.m., still doing Kingdom Hearts 2 and really enjoying that game a lot. Like I keep saying, it's just so many improvements over the first game. Definitely easier, definitely more fun. I just had to help. Let's see. Oh, I'm doing the Pirates of the Caribbean section, right? Or I might have just finished it.
Yeah.
And... yeah, it's very, very cool. I imagine it must have been very expensive to use the likenesses of Johnny Depp and Orlando Bloom and Keira Knightley. It's not their voices, though. Not that I would expect that. But yeah. it was fun.
Some of them got pulled in for Kingdom Hearts 3.
Okay. So I did that section and that was fun. I had to, and before that I had help Minnie and Merlin do something, and now, you know, Maleficent has shown up, and yeah. So just cruising right through that game. It's much easier, much more fun. So I like it. And then you can still check out my YouTube channel under Smoke and Joe Gamer. I haven't done any new videos in a while, but like I said, since I got that new capture card and since I replaced my motherboard, my computer is fully functional. fixed all the problems I was having, and now I can record 4K 60 content off of the Switch 2, the PS5, the Series X. So hoping to make some more content, do some more like reviews and stuff. So check that out. And then I am working on some music projects, so maybe I'll have a song to share at some point. And didn't somebody say they might want me to do a theme song for the return of Adventures in Platforming? I don't know. I yes, could look please. Into that.
Wheels might have said that.
I mean, yeah, that would be most appreciative, especially since okay. the new episode would be on a game you may be playing.
Oh, okay.
But on a better version.
Gokazorki.
In theory. A better version.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then, yeah, so...
Someone tell me how to play Soul Reaver. I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing.
What am I doing?
Metroid game, dude. It's a Metroid game.
I have two boxes. It looks like I need to put a box on top of a box. I don't know how to do that.
If you crouch next to a box, you can lift it. Like,
oh, God
you
damn
can
it.
Lift it the thing.
I don't think I would have figured that out either. No, to be fair,
the game's tutorial actually tells you can do that. But...
Oh, it does. Okay. Oh, you skipped the tutorial like you always do, didn't you?
No, I played this a few days ago. I probably just forgot.
Okay.
If you crouch next to a box, you can like you can't lift it above your head, but you can push lift it on top of another box.
Okay.
So yeah, you can. Oh, you can also follow me on Blue Sky, although I haven't been as active lately. Yeah, I post whatever I feel like on there. And so if I do end up with like a new video, I would probably post a link to it on Blue Sky. And then last night for Shenanigans, we were doing some Splatoon Raiders, and I kept playing after you signed off and did a few more missions. I feel like I'm getting close to the end, or at least, I don't know, the end of this part of the ocean. I don't know, but we're
a neat game. Play it every so often for like 20 minutes at a time, which it's well suited to.
Yes, it is.
Exactly. You do a couple of missions, and no, what I love about it is the fact that no matter how many times we died, we still got to keep any loot we picked up. We still got to get XP for what we did accomplish before dying.
You will never have wasted time by having made a run.
Well, yes,
that game does what I think a lot of looter shooters mess up. Looking at you, Borderlands.
Yep.
I don't want to wander around a boring ass fucking open world. I want to get into a room and shoot a bunch of dudes and get some loot. It's pretty simple.
I want to shoot and I want to loot. It's my loot and I need it now.
Give me my loot.
This is what Destiny did better than your game, because you could just load up a mission and just get going instead of, well, I'm going to drive to the other side of this boring map, talk to a character, and then drive to the other side of this boring map, and then finally...
It also, helps when comparing Borderlands to other things. That every other thing that Borderlands is competing with is less miserably ugly. But
yes.
Doesn't bother me, but I get it.
I like the cel-shaded thing, but I don't like the Mad Max post-apocalypse shantytown psycho garbage.
I like both of those ideas. I just think they did it really.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Yeah, that's fair. So then our friend Gaijin could not make it, but you can buy his books. I do have one of the Princesses of the Pizza Parlor compilations that I never got around to reading, but I'm going to, I wanted to support a friend. And so he's got a whole bunch of books you can look for under Michael Yarimizu.
Yarimizu.
Yep, and also under Michael Spearwater as a separate pen name that he uses for stuff that's
You'll
more
never
adult.
Guess what Yarimizu means.
Spearwater. Does it?
Yes. Yari means spear, and Mizu means water. This is why the spear guy in Super Mario RPG on the Super Nintendo was Yaridovich.
Yaridovich. Oh! Cool. So yeah, you can buy his books on Amazon. There's physical copies, there's Kindle copies. I think he just got done doing
Princesses of the Pizza Parlor is about to... Yeah. Princesses of the Pizza Parlor is about to conclude. if it's not already concluded. You could experience the end of a long indie journey.
Nice.
Could and should.
And then you can interact with...
What the hell is going on with what's playing in the background in my speakers? I must have something... Oh, that's what's happening. Jesus!
What?
I was listening... I was hearing, like, the theme song to a truly ancient mecha show. Why on earth is it playing? And it's like, oh, it's because it's pulled open something from my media library. Why on earth am I hearing the Yamato theme?
Well, so... I'm actually, I just watched Sailor Moon for the first time today, and I'm 40 years old.
Ever?
Yeah, because I thought it was for girls.
Well, that's...
Because I used to be like that.
Many
I used
people
to be like,
are like this as children.
When I was a teenager, I wouldn't play Kingdom Hearts because girls play that game. But, so, it was on that new Sony streaming service, and, It's so I watched episode 6 or 7 and then 8 and 9 and it's like, this is cool. I like this kind of watercolor surrealist kind of visual design. I like the music a lot. And so far I like Mars because she is just no nonsense and she's mean and I love it. And she lights things on fire.
Well, it's not to like.
So then you can also interact with all of us through Discord. There is an RP Gamer Discord server that you can join, and you just can't swear. That's all. That's the one rule.
I don't post one.
Somehow I don't. Yeah. I haven't broken that rule.
I've broken it and gotten... Tam deleted one of my comments and scolded me, and he was right to do so, and I wasn't upset about it at all. But that's kind of the only rule, obviously, like, refrain from not safe for work type stuff. But we're all on there. We're all on Blue Sky. And if you'd like to ask us questions, you can go to the Discord server. And there is, on the European Gamer Discord server, there is a channel for podcasts where you can post questions. And you can ask us questions while we're broadcasting live, which we are right now, on... twitch.tv/rpgamer and sometimes also on the Ask Wheels channel.
Not on the Ask Wheels channel anymore. Now we do Blue Sky live streaming.
Alternate stream
place.
I didn't know that was a thing. Okay. Yes, maybe I should look into that.
Yeah, if you follow me on Blue Sky, you will see a live notification when that's up on our usual time with a link. I will probably be doing that instead of doing this show on my channel.
Okay. So
we'll never get an affiliate check again.
So you can watch the live broadcast of this podcast Q&A quest on twitch.tv/rpgamer
and Screen Place Ask Wheels.
Yep, and then so while you're watching live, starting around 11 p.m. or 12 a.m. Eastern time, you can post questions in the Twitch chat, and we will see it, and we might answer it. Well, we probably will answer it.
Mondays going into Tuesdays.
Yes.
I will also point out, so that more people are aware, when we aren't on that much over the coming month, that as I will be out for like 3 weeks in September, there will be limited episodes.
Yeah.
Vacation.
We're going to post, we're going to do a short episode just to talk about the Nintendo Direct, if there is one. That will be
I might try to use my jet lag to my advantage to briefly pop in for that. We'll see.
Yeah, but during that time, I probably will still be streaming a little bit, not long streams. During our usual time, I may even answer some questions, but it will not be a regular show.
It will not be official.
Yeah, and will not go up on the podcast feed.
Make sure to check it out.
Yeah.
Okay, that's about all I got, and made my throat's killing.
All right.
Okay.
Everyone go to bed.
See you, Space Cowboy.
See you.
See you, guys.
I'll see you.